You're listening to The Big Show with Patrick Dumas on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome to Big Show Hour 4, live from the Doug Lacy's Basement Systems downtown studio. Cracked foundation, Boeing foundation walls. We have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. Got a busy Hour 4 here on the Big Show. A couple head coaches here in Calgary, one new one. One heading to the Centennial Cup later on in May, but we're going to start with the new one. New Calgary Surge head coach back on Thursday. They announced their new head coach for the 2024 CEBL season. His name is Tyrell Vernon. Tyrell, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I hope you're doing all right.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. You know, you've been coaching in the U Sport ranks the last few seasons quite successfully. Now, why was right now the right time to head back to the pro ranks?
I've been in the pro ranks now for a few seasons, and it's kind of the CEBL correlates with the U Sport season.
Yeah.
So, the last couple of seasons I've been working with the Scarborough Shooting Stars, and then this opportunity came up, and I definitely talked with the family about and jumped at. But Calgary's been amazing.
Now, like with the CEBL schedule, the season, it is a kind of a short season. You know, it's just like a summer type thing. Like, does that work with your life and what's going on? Like, I believe you're going to stay with doing some St. FX work.
Yes, yeah. So okay. I'm staying with St. FX. So St. FX season goes basically from beginning of September until the beginning of March, right? And then the CEBL season, we're looking May until that mid to third week of August. So, that's where the U Sport draft comes in. So it's very connected between U Sports. So, to be a part of it, and, Coach Konchalski kind of introduced me kind of to the league. And he's a senior advisor here with Calgary. Yeah. And then Shane, the GM, I've competed with him kind of all the way through. So it's, it was a seamless thing to kind of join the CEBL. Now to get this opportunity has been a blessing.
Yeah, you had a front row seat to watching the Surge last year in the championship game with your Scarborough Shooting Stars eventually beating the Surge in the championship game. But what about this Surge team excites you? Obviously, like I just said, falling one game short of that title.
The first thing that excites me is more so just the team behind the team. To start, it's extremely professional. Mm-hmm. I felt that right when I got off the plane and I met everybody. And, but for the player side, I'm really excited about what we have. It's not the exact same team of last year, but, I think we have extreme, we have great length. I think we're very switchable. We're going to be able to shoot the ball at multiple positions. So I think it'll be an exciting brand of basketball. Now, we're going to need a little bit of luck here up and down, but, I think it's a very competitive team.
Now you mentioned the relationship between U Sport and the CEBL. Like, how big has the CEBL been just for U Sport? Because it feels like I don't want to say it was an afterthought for a lot of people when it comes to talking about basketball in this country, but it didn't get a lot of play. But now you're getting a lot of CEBL players that come from U Sport. Talk about that relationship and how it's benefited both.
I think it's been great. I think, for the CEBL, I think it's connected. It's connected to CEBL to, all the basketball community that's in the U Sport, which is a lot of players, a lot of coaches, a lot of alumni. And then for the U Sport side, to be able to be a player at U Sports and, play professionally with these players and then be able to go back to your locker rooms, as a student athlete, just the confidence that you're bringing, the things that you're learning over the summer is very, it's invaluable. And, for NCAA players to not be able to do that, and these U Sport guys to be able to do that, you're creating relationships with guys. You're creating relationships with guys. And some guys are making $300,000-$400,000 for a contract, and then you're going back to U Sports and you're seeing what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. So, there's not a lot of secrets. So I think it's been a great opportunity on both sides.
Now, you mentioned Coach K, Steve Konchalski. He's now the Surge senior advisor, but you played under him, you coached under him. Just talk about what it's like been reuniting with Coach K.
No, it's been great. I wouldn't say last couple of years has been a little bit. We haven't had a ton of conversations about the pro side just because he's been with Calgary and and I've been with Scarborough, but we've been together for every step of the way since I was a player, since. My first my first coaching plan, my first practice plan, you know, Coach K helped me design it when I was first coach at prep school. So, you know, he's definitely, you know, he's been a father figure to me, and, you know, we've definitely been through this thing the whole way together.
Talk about your journey. Like, I know I've talked with Shane James a few times, and he's been he was integral in Canadian basketball growing up with working with the AAU programs and whatnot. But talk about your journey in basketball in this country, because I know it, growing up, it wasn't always easy playing basketball in this country. But now you're starting to see, you know, in the NBA, it's got the second most players in the league out of it coming from Canada. So just talk about your journey in basketball that's gotten you up to this point.
Wow, it's been a, you know, basketball's kind of been a part of my life since I was a little kid. So, you know, I kind of fast forward to kind of high school. You know, I was an all-Canadian in high school. Ended up, you know, there's clearinghouse rules changed when I was at the end of high school. So I had all the Division I schools that I had, I couldn't go. And then I ended up staying home. So I'm a Hamilton kid, but I ended up staying at McMaster. And I was there for 3 seasons. And then, you know, just program-wise changed. And then I ended up going to St. FX with Coach K for my last 2 years. Graduated, played overseas, played in the Canadian League, the National Basketball League in Canada. And then while I was in that league, I went to Teachers College at the same time.
That's awesome.
And so from there, that kind of what kind of brought me into kind of the teaching and the coaching realm. You know, to be honest, there was a group of guys, young guys in Hamilton at the time that were, you know, they're really passionate about the game, young kids, and they, you know, they were soaking up everything every time I came back home. And, you know, I think that kind of gave me a little bit of the coaching itch. You know, it was my little brother and, their team, and, it was, Shea Gilgeous Alexander was on that team as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, early morning workouts and, they're really soaking up everything, and that's kind of what got me started with kind of giving back. And so then once I went to Teachers College, I got a couple phone calls to coach at a prep school, and decided to do that. We won 2 out of 3 championships while I was there in the 3 years, and then I got the call to go back to St. FX as a coach with Coach K, and then the succession plan came. So it happened fast, but no, I've really enjoyed this journey, and I'm blessed to be a part of it.
That's awesome, Tyrell. We're talking with Tyrell Vernon, the new head coach for the Calgary Surge. Their season will get underway May 21st with Surge to the Dome down at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. You mentioned you played over in Europe. Can you just explain to our listeners, like we see Team USA throw out their roster for the Olympics and whatnot, like all the big names, like, oh, they're just going to walk through the competition. But then people kind of forget that the game over in Europe and just the world game plays a lot different than that would be in the North American style game. Can you kind of just give us a crash course on like the differences between the world game and then what you see like watching the NBA?
I say the biggest difference is just, you know, ball movement, player movement. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff that, you know, the teams overseas are doing, it's not something that you can just implement in a week or 2 weeks. Right. So, you know, the American side definitely has the talent, the size, the athleticism, right? Where a lot of the world teams, you know, their systems probably have been in place for years.
Yeah.
Where the USA team, you know, their systems have only been in place for, you know, whatever they can do out of a training camp or whatever type of practice times the guys will give. So that'll be the difference. You know, it's a little bit of, does their force and their skill set, you know, surpass the, you know, the systems that have been placed with a lot of the major skill sets. You know, the world is growing in the NBA, right? So, you know, but it'll be interesting. Definitely be interesting.
You mentioned you have a past bit with the current Surge GM, Shane James. Talk about that.
Yeah, so actually growing up, so I was at a prep school called TRC Academy and when I started out, and Shane was with Thornley. He kind of ran everything over there. So, you know, for a while, it was more so us against Shane, you know, and what they had over there, and, you know, us going after the same recruits and the same players. So it was more of a competitive thing at the beginning. So, but I definitely respected him from afar. You know, he definitely had an eye for talent. He knew how to put, you know, good functioning, you know, just things that are ingrained in the kind of the GTA community for youth right now. It came from Shane. So, you know, definitely respected what he's done. And so now to be able to kind of work with him over here, you know, I think is a great opportunity.
I know Nelson Taroba, he did obviously a heck of a job last year with the surge. He's off to Rice Owls to be an assistant coach there in his home state. I know you've got a long ways to go here in this season, and obviously training camp still a few weeks away as well. But do you think the foundation is there, and do you think this group is close to bringing a CEBL title to Calgary?
Yeah, no, I think Nelson did a great job with the group, and yes, to build a foundation on what's expected. I think he did it was a work first mentality, with him here. And, I think I can definitely sense that from the guys that are returning. They're really ready to get after it and compete. And that's the main thing in this league. I think, with all these players coming from all over the world, Canadian and American or international, it's who can get the group to come in and just work the hardest together and enjoy that work. It's us as staff is to, put these guys in the positions to make their skill set look the best as possible. And, it's their job to come in and work hard and, be professionals. So, for right now, looking at the group, I think, I definitely think we have a group that can compete. Now it's just, rolling the ball out and then, getting after it.
We mentioned Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's one of the finalists for MVP in the NBA. And I just like to, branch out, basketball is so strong in this country, both men and women, and you're part of that journey with this league and what you've done at the youth sport level in your coaching past. That's got to be a pretty cool feeling, watching Canada basketball just go on this giant rise over the last few years.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And just to say, you don't always need to leave your country, to get, now the best players in the world, some of the best coaches in the world. So I felt like when I was growing up at a time, it felt like we had to do that. We had to leave our country in order to get certain experiences. Mm-hmm. Myself, I haven't had to leave this country for those experiences. To watch Shai, grow up and, Hamilton kid, came in from Toronto, but then he was in Hamilton for most of his, young career. But, just to watch what he's doing, I'm extremely proud. And it just shows that, things are changing. And now the resources are starting to be in place, for Canadian players to kind of represent without having to, go all over the place.
And the CEBL is doing an amazing job at that, entering its, its sixth season now.
Sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it's going to be the surge will be getting underway in just under a month's time now, May 21st, surge to the Dome. That's got to be going to be a pretty awesome feeling, playing in a big arena against your biggest rival.
Yeah, it's going to be I think it's going to be a great environment. I'm excited for the guys. I'm excited for the staff. I know everyone's working really hard, to put on that event. So I'm just, I think it would be great for all to kind of join and watch. And I think that the product will be an amazing product of basketball. You won't be disappointed.
No, we won't. It'll be an amazing time. Tyrell, thank you so much for taking some time out of your morning and chatting about the surge with me. And we'll look forward to seeing you down at Winsport in the Dome later this year.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem. There you go. Tyrell Vernon, new head coach for the Calgary Surge. Yeah, May 21st, just about a month away now, just under a month away. We'll have the first CBL game played in an NHL arena, I believe. It'll be the Edmonton Stingers and the Calgary Surge.
It'll be awesome to see.
Yeah.
You have the first game of the year, go out and pack the Dome or whatever, and yeah. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, that'll be the season opener, May 21st, 2024. Fans can purchase tickets for the season opener at calgarysurge.ca/surge-to-the-dome. You can also get your single game tickets for the remainder of the 2024 season over at calgarysurge.ca/single-game-tickets. The Surge are currently just finalizing the roster right now. Training camp's going to be starting up in the second week of May. I want to thank Hillary over at the Surge for setting that up, and we're gonna have more Calgary Surge content on our radio station into the month of May. We're in every Tuesday in the 905. We'll be talking to either president, coach, player, whatever for a little bit. We're gonna be giving away Surge tickets,
sweet,
as well. So that's gonna be an awesome little relationship we're building with them. Basketball's growing like a bad weed in this country, just like soccer is. I love seeing it. I love seeing those the world's games. And we're always gonna have hockey, of course, as the number one, but me as a fan of all sports,
yeah,
it's great to see
I totally agree. I mean, it just makes things more relatable, right? At the NBA, arguably the guy who's going to win the MVP right now, SGA's a Canadian.
Well, yeah, I don't know,
it's something we haven't seen since Steve Nash.
Exactly. And like to have how Tyrell mentioned that the game is around the world. Basketball has been massive, and now I think we're just starting to see the true talent of what the world has had to offer for so many years brought to the NBA, where it's not just the Americans game anymore where the U.S. can throw, yeah, we got all the names and everything, but it's going to be a surprise over there. And if you listen to some of the smarter minds on ESPN, the Brian Windhorst, you know, some of the insiders, you know, they're trying to tell the audience, don't expect
If you really look
through the Olympics like you're going to win gold, because Spain is super good, Serbia is super good, France is hosting, they're going to have Victor Wembanyama on that team, Canada's good. Germany is good. This game
Australia
is going,
always puts together Australia's a decent team. But
yeah, there's gonna have be all the NBA stars are gonna be there. But you know, some of those like those France teams, the Serbian teams, they play a different style because a lot of those guys play on the club teams over there. They know one another. They just they play a different style. So super excited to watch basketball at the Olympics this year. I know the women have been doing great for Canada, and now we're starting to see the men.
Basketball, you're only really starting to see the trickle-down effect of when the game really became global.
It was like, LeBron.
I would even argue Jordan.
Kobe?
I would argue Jordan with
the
Dream Team going over there in that 90s. So it's these 90s kids that are growing up. I think that's what you're starting to see right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Love to see these the sports in other countries do well, and it's not just a USA-dominated game. Around the corner, we're going to be talking with Brad Moran, head coach and GM of the Calgary Canucks, and then I don't know how long we'll spend on there, but then we'll kind of preview the night ahead. Four games in the Stanley Cup playoffs, two series getting underway in Dallas and in Edmonton. The Blue Jays will start a four-game set with the Royals this evening as well, and three games to go in the NBA playoffs as well tonight as the NBA opening weekend. All the home teams win everywhere in the NHL and in the NBA. I know it's only game one, but you know it really shows like, I know, and you can lose home ice, home court within if you lose game two.
Yeah.
But it does matter so much. Just to see the buildings, the atmosphere. I know those Jets players got excited watching that whiteout. You saw it at the TD Garden on Saturday with the Bruins crowd.
I think it matters more in hockey. I think that sport in general.
Well,
historically, the parity has just always been there, whereas in basketball, it's always been a front-running sport.
It's been a star-driven league, yeah, for sure. But like even so, like, you know, L.A. without Kawhi, guys pick it up. Paul George picks it up. You know, they still got James Harden as well. So, and beating Luka and the Mavs in game one. The Suns, man, like the T-Wolves. What they did to Phoenix there?
Yeah, I just don't know. I find Phoenix to be a bunch of frauds,
just
right? After their big three, like
that
big three never was able to stay healthy the entire season, and they destroyed their depth when they went out and got Bradley Beal. The Suns team that went to the finals a couple of years ago.
DeAndre Ayton was on that team.
It was a much better, like, soundly constructed basketball team. Yeah. They had campaign on their bench and all that. It was it's a much better team, but we'll see. You know, star-driven league, maybe Durant can average 30 or something like that.
Can Durant be the guy on a championship team?
I think you're starting to realize that. I really wish he would have stayed in Brooklyn and would have really led the charge over there. I know that he would have had a sidekick in Kyrie Irving before that whole thing blew up. But again, I don't think Kyrie Irving is necessarily a one either. So if they would have been able to build something nice there and win something, that would have meant way more for his legacy than those Mickey Mouse rings in Golden State when you built like a Power Ranger,
looking
an Avenger
back
type thing with Golden State.
Looking back though, like how close they were in OKC. Mm-hmm. And then that just gets blown up.
Yeah, because they blew a 3-1 lead to the Mavericks.
Yeah.
And the Mavericks went on to go win that NBA championship against LeBron his first year in Miami.
When the Thunder were in the final the next year, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you have James Harden on that team. Obviously, Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka's on that team.
Yeah.
I don't think it's got the crazy depth and picks and stuff that it has now. But also, like, SGA might be better than Durant was at that time.
The very different players, but you know, on the same trajectory. Mm-hmm. Like SGA is a top 5-10 player in the NBA. Durant was definitely at that point as well.
For sure. Around the corner, Brad Moran, head coach and general manager of the Calgary Canucks. They got some off time here. They will not kick off the Centennial Cup until May 9th. They're the only team that's clinched a spot in the Centennial Cup outside of the host in Oakville. We'll talk with Brad Moran next as Big Show Hour 4 continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back. Big Show Hour 4. GVP's just trying to get Brad Moran on the line. That's probably what that beeping was. But welcome back. Big Show Hour 4 live from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. I want to thank, again, Tyrell Vernon for joining the show. He joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Update from Leafs practice ahead of game two. Line rushes showing the same as last game. No William Nylander. And it looks like Ilya Samsonov will be getting the start as well, as the Leafs try and knot that series up at two, or sorry, knot that series up at one game apiece. That'll be on the Sportsnet family of channels tonight at 5 o'clock. We go down the Atlas Pizza Sports Bar guest hotline. We're joined by the head coach and general manager of the AJHL champion Calgary Canucks. Brad, thank you so much for taking some time out of your morning and chatting some Canucks hockey with me.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, 10th AJHL championship last Wednesday in a four-game sweep of the Whitecourt Wolverines, first since 98. I don't know if the sweep was on the bingo card for the championship series, but just talk about how that went for you guys.
No, it definitely wasn't expected, but you know, we wanted to at least get a split up in Whitecourt, and we were able to put a really good game one together, and then another solid game two. So we kind of had them, I guess, down a little bit. I think they had a tough series before that went seven games, and Canmore was quite physical, and I don't know what their energy levels were to make that pushback. So we were able to continue to keep our foot down, so to say.
No, I know in any championship run, there's going to be a team full of guys that are pulling their weight. But what are some of the standout players that really showed off for you guys during this playoff run, and hopefully to lead off into better things come May in the Centennial Cup?
I think the reason we were able to win and sweep was we had numerous guys step up. I think up front, I think we've got three guys with 18 points. Our captain was leading the scoring as well, and I think with multiple guys over a point a game. But it was kind of the depth guys that also increased their points per game, almost double from the regular season, and then different guys on different nights on timely goals, whether it was the overtime goals or scoring the last 5 minutes to tie it or take the lead. And on top of that, we had the best goal in the league backstopping us with as good a decor as any team that's going.
And now in any playoff run, in whatever level of hockey it is, there's got to be that moment in a championship run where you're like, hey, you know, I think we can do this. Was there a moment for you in any of this playoff run where you're like, hey, yeah, we might be able to win this whole thing?
You know, I think there was always the belief, but I think as it went on, past Grand Prairie into Drumheller, and then I really think the second period in the first game in Whitecourt, we really took over. To score four goals in the third period in a rink where they had won 20 in a row this year. I think they lost, that was their third loss since November there.
And wow.
To really put them on their heels, just our guys, you could see that something was going on in the room, and they were really in it for each other, and you could just feel something was going to happen.
You know, as a player, you know, you've had those moments of winning, you know, being a part of the 99 Calgary Hitmen, for example. But, you know, like as a coach and general manager, what was the feeling like for you when that final buzzer went there in game four?
A little different. I think it's just you got mixed emotions. You're not on the ice, but you're kind of enjoying the moment and just so happy for the players knowing what it's like on that side of it. And at the same time, trying to enjoy it, but thinking ahead to what's next, because it's just kind of the coach's mindset is what are we preparing for? So it was a bunch of everything.
Now, like as the general manager, it's been a few years of struggle there with the Calgary Canucks as you've gone through a bit of a rebuild. But I know the journey isn't done. But if you had a chance to sit back and look at what you guys have put together over the last few years, that has led to a title.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more satisfying things is to be able to essentially be rock bottom for a few years and lots of different things going on and off ice, and then the COVID on and off stuff. But to be able to bring in a group and a lot of young guys, but guys that have been here a couple of years now. And I think last year, record aside, I think we had 28 one-goal games. And
wow.
So all we got to do is flip the
flip
the script on some of those games, which we did this year, and they came together.
Now, I know this is like you only have to worry about what goes on with your league and the AJHL, but was there any sense of, you know, like concern with the league's health once the, you know, those five teams left to go to the BCHL, or was it just like, hey, you know what, we're just the Calgary Canucks, we're doing our thing, we're a part of the AJHL? Was there any sort of fear that there would be a problem with the league going forward without those five?
No fear. I think we would proceed. I think there was a lot of unknowns, and I think more so a lot of anxiety for the players. They all want to know what's going on. Are we playing? Are we not? And I think that actually helped us. I give them a lot of credit
in
getting through that, focusing on, hey, we're practicing today. When we play. And they got through that. And then now I think it's settled down, and I think it's as strong as it's ever been. We've got 11 committed teams, and we'll see what else they decide to do, but I've got no concerns.
And with that, you know, with the league, you know, having that fracture there in mid-season, you know, you don't have to play the BCHL for a right to go to the Centennial Cup, but kind of on the other side of the card is you guys have a lot of downtime now before you have to head out to Oakville. Like, what's the time for you guys practicing? What's it like in the lead up before the Centennial Cup right now, without not playing?
Yeah, I think that's what we'll get back to today. And I think making sure the guys are focused. We're fortunate enough we can push ourselves on and off the ice as some teams are still playing, and work on the conditioning, make sure our details are as good as we can, because we don't know who we're playing
exactly
yet. So it's not like we can prepare. So we'll worry about ourselves, but try to get creative, have some scrimmages, have our affiliates out so we can best prepare and make sure that we hit the ground running.
Well, at least you're going to have some scrimmages, at least to have some sort of game action. That's going to be good for the guys. But, you know, the Centennial Cup, like the Memorial Cup, you know, you play a round robin, not series. It's a little bit different for anyone that hasn't been a part of that. But do you have any different approaches you have in such a short tournament that you want to tell those guys, like, we have to play a little bit different because, you know, it's almost like a winner-take-all type situation. You know, one loss could ruin it all.
Yeah, and I think we've been very good at adapting quite quickly, and we tried to keep our pre-scouts to that mentality of, okay, we can't throw too much information, let's really really focus on us. And in that situation, I look at our entire playoff series, and I think we had one really off game with three losses, and then we learned from our first two. But since then, you know, we got to be on every night, so that's what's encouraging, is you can't afford to have that off night.
Now, when's the plan? When do you guys plan on heading out down to Oakville?
So we fly out on May 7th, and our first game is on the 9th.
Yeah,
so
right away.
We've got some time, but we'll make sure we're ready when we get down there.
For sure, Brad. And I know we'll be watching from here and cheering you guys on. Thank you for chatting with me and for all the Calgary Canucks have done for us in this city. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. I think it brought a lot back for a lot of people, so
sure,
it's nice for us to do that. So appreciate the time.
No problem. There you go. There's Brad Moran, head coach and general manager of the Calgary Canucks, 10th AJHL crown, first since 1998. They got a little time off here before they head out to Oakville, Ontario, just a little west of Toronto there, to play in the Centennial Cup, the biggest Junior A trophy, national championship trophy in this land. I was doing a little bit of research, just going through all the leagues yesterday, and it's the Junior A, man. That's true grit hockey, riding buses, man. Like, you got the dub and the O and the Q, like that's top. But man, those towns that those guys have to travel to, it's crazy.
Oh, trust me, man. I even played in the step below that, where it was even like grit and grime Junior B type hockey. You gotta love the game type to play that.
Oh, yeah.
But people forget just how good a hockey the AJHL has, right? Like, arguably the second best player in the world is a product out of the AJHL. Cale McCarr, right out of Brooklyn, right out of the Brooks Bandits there. They've ran a great program for so many years. Like, I would even say that a good Brooks team, some of those championship Brooks teams over the last couple of years, could probably go toe-to-toe with a couple of CHL teams across the league, right? So It might not get the same type of shine that it has in comparison to the CHL, but year in and year out, they put up some NHL quality prospects all the time, right?
Yeah, and guys go to D1 schools down south to commit, to go play, to extend their hockey career.
That's the thing, right? Like, as soon as you play a game in the WHL, as soon as you declare that you're going to go play in the WHL, that college NCAA status is gone. You get years of schooling after you're done.
You go the U Sport.
Yeah, that's why, like, the U of A Golden Bears are good all the time. They pick up a lot of ex-Dub
UNB.
Guys.
UNB.
Yeah, the Dinos pick up a lot of ex-Dub guys as well.
Nebraska. So, Brunswick.
Yeah, Nebraska. But, yeah, like, the Dinos pick up ex-Dub guys and stuff like that, too. But the AJHL offers that alternative stream kind of where you keep all your options open. And that's what junior hockey players need, really. I always thought that
options to keep going, to keep playing, extending your life.
Yeah, I always thought that CHL rule was kind of short-sighted and kind of dumb.
And I think that's kind of coming to an end here. I think we are going to start seeing that in the next few years where, you know, overagers in the CHL that, you know, they will be offered to go play NCAA hockey. And we've seen that. I know Jeff Merrick's been talking about that a little bit. I don't know what that does to U Sport level. It's going to obviously take away some of the high-end talent that you'd be expecting. Hey, well, I'm going to go to UFC. I don't want to stay here. Or, hey, I get offered to go play at Minnesota.
Yeah.
To play with the Golden
Gophers.
U
Sports almost feel like, I don't know, from people that I know that play that, and it almost feels like a retirement plan almost, really. Like, they not like only the elite of the elite
retirement,
only the elite of the elite in U Sports get to move on. Yeah. But so there's a good chunk of people that just continued their career there. Are fine with getting an education, which is all cool. Everyone's got to hang them up
your
some
education's
point.
Education's paid for, too, with
WHL
scholarship program.
Exactly, but it's not necessarily a league and a program that, like, push people to pro hockey. So
yeah, it's tough to see. Like, Luke Philp, I believe, is one of the more recent ones to come out of – he came out of U of A. He's had a cup of coffee in the NHL as well. But, yeah, it's been a great support here. It's been awesome having the Calgary Canucks as partners here at Sportsnet 960. And, for sure. I know the Centennial Cup is probably a hell of a lot tougher to win the Memorial Cup. There's more teams in it. You don't have a lot of, film video on these guys. You like Brad said, they're flying out on the 7th. Like, they'll probably know who they're playing by then, because, like, I was going through, like, the MJHL is still in their final. The SJHL is still in their final. A few of the Ontario leagues are in their semifinals. They haven't even got to the conference final stage. I haven't even looked out what it is out in the Maritimes yet. But
like you said, these guys aren't doing film.
No,
like,
they're not.
In junior hockey, especially in the AJ, like, you're on the ice 5 days a week, and then you're training off the ice for another three, and then you got three games mixed in there throughout the week. Like, you might do one video session, and it's not like you're prepping for the other team. It's trying to figure out why your power play stinks, or, like,
exactly
what your breakout is and all that stuff, right? It's not necessarily pregame scouting.
Yeah, exactly. And if I just stammer here a little bit, I do have the schedule. Their first game is going to be on the opening day of the tournament, the Thursday, May 9th, and it'll be up against the winner of the OJHL, so the Ontario Junior Hockey League.
Yeah,
that's the GTA right there. Some of the best junior A in the country coming out of there. And then their second match will be on Saturday against the Quebec champ. And then on Monday, they play against the Northern Ontario champ. And then they'll play the Central Canadian, which is like just north of Toronto league. So they're going to play everybody. Obviously, the BCHL, the only league that doesn't get to participate in
this. Yeah, well,
they've separated from Hockey Canada.
Yeah.
And they operate independently now. But yeah, thank you to Morgan Melnick over at the Canucks for setting that up with Brad. Hopefully they can win a few games down in Oakville. Want to get you set up for the night ahead around the sporting world. It's day three of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Four games. 5 o'clock, the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Boston Bruins. Bruins up 1-0 in that series after absolutely blitzing the Leafs there on Saturday. And reports from practice, the morning skate, same lineup for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Heading into game two. So I know that wasn't a lot. A lot of Leaf fans didn't want to see that. No William Nylander.
I mean, Matty was talking about that having the Leafs start out on the road kind of was better for them. And then Boston's a hard place to play.
Boston's extremely hard.
And you got shelled like that. Like, if I remember correctly, it wasn't game one for Maple Leafs Lightning. Didn't that not go in the Leafs' favor as well? Like, it felt like that series, it took a game or two for the Leafs to really get their feet underneath them in that series as well and finally get over the hump there. Like, I don't think this series is destined for a sweep.
Yeah, Leafs did lose 7-3 in game one and then won 7-2 in game two.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you could see kind of the same thing here, but it feels like every time the Leafs make the playoffs, obviously there's so much pressure around them, and it's, you know, for good reasons, but it's just one game. And
yeah,
I think the Leafs are a good enough team to stay in this series. It's going to be a long, hard-fought series. Boston is an excellent club, but I still think that I'd give the edge in top-end talent to Toronto. It's just that you need that top-end talent to show up here.
It's where Boston wins is that back is their defense core,
yeah,
and the goaltending. And if Swayman is just all right, I mean, they none of the Leafs shots were super dangerous. They had one right off the start of the game. Nick Robertson gets a nice pad save by Jeremy Swayman. That was maybe most dangerous chance the Leafs had to open that one. It will be tough. We got to see more out of Austin Matthews. Need to see, obviously, more out of Mitch Marner, because with William Nylander, we don't know. Maybe he comes in for game three, but that was so weird. He plays the end of the year, and then like that, it's gone, and you do not get a damn peep out of anybody.
Nylander was off to such a great start this season, obviously gets that massive extension.
Mm-hmm.
Really, something that almost really swept under the radar to an extent was, like, he was kind of sputtering ever since he signed that deal.
He
wasn't great.
The splits,
after that.
It is night and day between the guy was on pace for like 130, 140 points before he signed that contract. Finishes with 97. Hey, nobody's going to scoff at 97.
Hell of a year. Probably worth that money still. But
literally
go
look at those stats and where and how much he was contributing. Who knows? If he's going, Austin Matthews probably scores more than 70. That's just right, because it was Matthews just really there at the end of the year dragging the Leafs offensively, because, you know, Marner wasn't around, Nylander wasn't doing anything, John Tavares now, like,
getting
quietly doing his thing, but yeah, they need to help out, and Austin Matthews needs to help out this team a lot. That goes at 5:00. You can watch that on Sportsnet, and the CBC Hockey Central gets underway at 4:30. At 5:30, Islanders and Carolina Hurricanes. Carolina, you know, that game is probably a little bit closer than
it's good showing by New York. I still think this is going to be a short series, but like, hey, that game one was still really competitive, and that's the type of hockey
Patty Wall's
New York plays.
Yep.
It's that boring, drag you into deep water defensive type hockey. Yeah.
But that talent shows out for Carolina.
Yeah, I think they just have just enough to where they can eke out, like, maybe in four games in a row. It could be like a gross, ugly sweep where all these games are pretty tightly contested. I still like Carolina in that series. A lot of people want to, like, George likes to rag on them as everybody's Stanley Cup pick, but I think they're a super, super deep team. If they got matched up, like, against the Rangers in the next series, which likely could happen, I like Carolina in that one as well.
Yeah, it'll come down to goaltending there in Carolina. Can Freddie Anderson be the guy when it matters enough? Like right now, game one, it's all good. Looking good in Carolina. They do have the horses to get it done. It's also they're the biggest favorite tonight. They're coming in at minus 260. You get the Islanders at plus 204 on the money line if you want to, you know, throw a little money, make some money if the Islanders win tonight. That's
going to be a tight game.
Yeah,
so
that's on that's on Sportsnet 360 at 5:30. 7:30, surprise, surprise, Mark Stone likely in the lineup tonight for the Vegas Golden Knights. I wonder what that does to the series line, because heading in, it was probably, when it comes to a traditional 1v8, that 8th seed is probably the closest to actually knocking off a 1 seed, if you want to believe Vegas.
Yeah, I would think so.
What Mark Stone will do to them. And again, like, this is, you can complain about it, you can bitch about it all you want, but nothing's going to be done until the CBA expires in 2 years. Then there will be changes. But
yeah,
until then.
And Kypreos brings up an interesting point that even when they go into discussions,
will
it even
get
changed? Because
yeah,
every owner wants this get out of jail free card in their back pocket.
Like, if you can't pawn off a bad contract on a team that's that just needs to reach the floor.
Yeah.
This is what you got to do, right? You know, throw them on LTIR. I think there can be different ways. If it's like I think there can be a way if it's just maybe extending maybe having the salary cap a part of the playoffs. I don't know.
You need to.
And I get that's
like,
tough with all the injuries.
Obviously, there's a rule, and teams need the ability to be able to dance with the cap when there's injuries. But, like, people are going to question the legitimacy of this injury, right?
We thought we were hearing life-threatening.
Yeah.
If he hits, he could bleed to death. Like that's what we were hearing. And now to see him, that he was clear for contact on Saturday, and that he's a legit option on Monday, yeah, that's going to stick in people's craw.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing. Like, I think teams should be given a way to where they're, are allowed to maneuver around the cap with injuries. But these injuries have to be legit. Like, yep. something needs to be yep. looked into about this. You just said life-threatening. The guy could die if he gets hit.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's good for game one? Something stinks.
Something stinks as well. That one's on Sportsnet 360. It's fully on FX. It'll be joined in progress on 360 following the Hurricanes and Islanders. So if your cable package picks up FX, you can watch the Stars and Vegas Knights start of that one. And then the late one, 8 o'clock, Edmonton Oilers, Los Angeles Kings, game one up at Rogers Place. Sportsnet and CBC have you covered on the TV. We'll have it for you on the radio as well. 7 o'clock pregame, 8 o'clock, a little bit after puck drop, playoffs, puck drops closer to like 8:20. But yeah, Kings and Oilers. Not a lot of people giving the LA Kings a lot of chance in this one. I know it's tough for anybody to beat a team 3 years in a row, but unless Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to, finally play like Pierre-Luc Dubois, something he really hasn't ever in his entire career.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a quick week here, a couple weeks here for the Los Angeles Kings.
I gave the Oilers this one in six games. I think maybe the way in which LA plays, kind of similar to what the Islanders do. They're kind of playing almost like trap hockey nowadays. Oh, yeah. Maybe they'll be able to grind out a game
Kings
on the road and then maybe another one at home. Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if this series goes back to L.A.
1-1?
Tied at two.
Tied.
I wouldn't be surprised after four games this thing's tied at two.
Okay.
And, like, the Oilers were the better team in all of those games. It's just that L.A. was able to grind out one or two. I think Oilers are a much better team here. Like, you mentioned Dubois. He's been a non-factor for this team a lot of the year. Down the stretch, Quentin Byfield was sputtering a lot. He went on like that long goal drought.
Mm-hmm.
They are what they are. They have flaws in their goaltending as well. I just think the top talent on the Oilers are going to be able to dominate this series as usual.
Yeah, if you're like, and the thing is, it's not just McDavid and Drysdale anymore. It's got Nugent Hopkins. It's got Zach Hyman.
Henrique was a good addition for them too. Down the middle,
nice playoff add. And defensively, they're better.
Corey Perry for some
Corey
playoff
Perry.
Grit, and Skinner's proven himself.
We still don't know if Evander Kane is going to play tonight. I know he was. It's kind of an unknown. He's dealing with a sports hernia. He hopes to play with game one. So if he misses game one, and he's in game two, not a big deal. But that's one thing to monitor is Evander Kane's status for tonight. I feel like he needs to be in this series too if the Oilers want to move on.
Oh yeah, I mean we saw it when the Flames took on the Oilers with the last time they made the playoffs.
Him and Perry together.
It was the Evander Kane show in the elimination game. He had a hat trick.
Yeah. You can't be. You need to have him if the Oilers want to go on a long run. But that's your Stanley Cup playoff scenarios for tonight. Four games, two series getting underway in Dallas and Edmonton, and Toronto and the Islanders. They try to knot their series up at one game apiece. Blue Jays also beginning a four-game set today in Kansas City, taking on the Royals, 5:40 first pitch. 12-10 Jays taking on the 13-9 Royals. Yusei Kikuchi versus Brady Singer is your pitching matchup. That's a great pitching matchup. Sportsnet 1 has you covered there. Blue Jays Central starts up at 5 o'clock. That'll do it for us. Want to thank all of our guests today. I want to thank Nick Kiprios, Jamie Campbell, Brent Cron, Tyrell Vernon, and Brad Moran for joining the show. All those interviews are up on our Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. The Jeff Merrick Show is up next. Elliot Friedman kicking off the show at 10:05. Andrew Raycroft from Nesson, former Bruins and Leafs goalie, to talk that series at 10:35. And Jake Allen, he was a star on the weekend on the Hockey Central panel, did great work working for Sportsnet. He'll join the show at 11:35. Whatever you do today, it's a beautiful day out there. Enjoy it and keep it locked right here. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.